Time now to go to Sunday school with the professor. Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lawrence.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helfer.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Doesn't like the way you think.
KNBR 680, the sports leader. Brought to you by River Islands, one of the country's top-selling master plan communities just across the Altamont in Lathrop. Where else can you live on a lake, next door to a park, or walking distance to your kids' new school? With 10 new neighborhoods, River Islands is the one place you can't afford to miss.
All right. Good morning. Whoa, how are you?
Marty, I'm well. Good morning to you.
Very good. Boy, a beautiful day for baseball today. And as we wrap up the homestand, and it's on to St. Louis. And, you know, I just want to touch on St. Louis for a second. This is a team that was down, up, and all of a sudden they're hot again. And this is part of baseball. You play 162, and you got to be prepared for all of them.
That's right. I mean, there's a lot that goes into the season. I mean, just look at our ball club, how much it's changed over the course of the year. And that's why, you know, you always want to get off to a good start. But in reality, the start's not as important as this, the whole package, because now's the time you need to be hot. Now's the time that you can really, you know, make some hay. And you're seeing it with teams like that. St. Louis has been very, very hot. You just mentioned Arizona. They're on a little bit of a streak there. But you got to continue it. There's another month of baseball left. St. Louis has always put together a good club. And it's going to be a tough four games for us in St. Louis coming up.
No, absolutely. Hey, and you know something? They had a doubleheader yesterday, and they have a doubleheader today.
Wow.
And then get you tomorrow. I'll tell you, and I always go back to, you know, the way baseball was played. You know, they had so many rainouts when the fields were not quite as dramatically put together like Greg Elliott can do, and the drainage and all that. They used to have rainouts all summer long, and you'd make up these doubleheaders on road trips where you could have a road trip of 10 or 12 games that could turn into 18 because of the doubleheaders. You don't see it that often.
Yeah, no, you know, we don't see it out here, obviously, too, on the West Coast, because we don't get the weather. But you go to the Midwest, you go to the East, they have to deal with that weather all the time. I think we've talked about that in the past, you know, about things that can happen, because it makes it difficult, you know, all the doubleheaders, losing a travel off day to go play a game somewhere. Those are difficult things for logistics and just rest. And, you know, it would be great to see MLB try to do something to, you know, they gave us more off days. So, you know, that in itself helps with these doubleheaders. But, you know, I know Japan has some days planned in there for weather and what they do. And I think we can continue to do better at that, too, here in the United States to make these rainouts and doubleheader possibilities a little bit easier on everybody.
Yeah, well, the St. Louis is known for it. You know, the weather in the Midwest, Cincinnati, and, you know, every time we do games back there, I'm just glad to get out of there.
Right.
Without rain delays. All right, Woe is with us, the third base coach of the San Francisco Giants, the professor. Boy, last night a lot of stuff happened, and I was thinking of you as I'm watching the game. How about Hosmer and the bunt, where he dropped it and got the double play on Webb and Belt going to third? You don't see that one too often. And I was kind of surprised, and I'll let you take it from here, that he didn't go to third first and then go across the diamond that way. What'd you think?
Yeah, a little bit. It was a good play on his part. I guess he felt that his best play was going to first, and I'm not quite sure. I'd like to know what his thought process was there. You know, Belt was caught in a difficult position. You know, the number one thing in that bunt situation is you want to bunt the ball to third base, and you never want to pop it up, because a popped-up bunt with men on first and second, now you're at the mercy of the fielder, you know, catching the ball in the air and double somebody off, or letting it drop. And then that's where you have another double play. You know, when you're a base runner in that situation, when that ball's popped up, you can't compound things by, you know, you have to stop, you have to freeze and go back, because if he catches it, it's a double play. But the heads-up thing, which he did, is he let it drop, and now all the runners are retreating to their base. He threw to first, and in reality, Belt didn't have to go, but I haven't seen that play happen like that as long as I've been up here with San Francisco Giants. And the natural reaction is, once he threw the first, to try to get over to the third base. And if Machado didn't block him off the bag, I felt he would have been safe. So he got his legs there. He blocked him off the base, and that's why he couldn't reach the base.
Well, interesting. I hadn't thought about that, that Belt didn't have to run on that play. That's a good point.
Yeah, and, you know, it happens fast. You don't see that. But again, once that ball, he threw that ball to first base, I know he felt in his mind, I need to get to third base. And as I said, I thought he would have been safe if Machado didn't block him off. But a heads up play by Hosmer. You know, you're always thinking about dropping pop ups in the infield, whether it's a bunt or a regular pop up that's not an infield fly. If you have a slower runner, at the plate and maybe a speedy runner at first, there's a pop-up in the infield where it won't bounce and kick away. You can let that thing drop, pick it up, get the force at second, and then put the slower runner on first base. That's where you typically see it, and you see it on bunts as well, and where we saw it last night.
Right, great baseball. Great baseball. Well, I learned something. Actually, I forgot about that. DeBone could have gone back to first and Belt to second and leave it at that.
Yeah,
interesting. Hey, good point, Will. That is why you are the professor. I like it. All right, very good. All right, then we had a rundown play. Now, of course, I love the rundown play when it's more than, now for you, you don't, but I love it when it's more than one or two throws. It brings me back to Jackie Robinson or Rod Carew or some of the great ones. And I'm going to ask you some of the great ones you've seen get out of that pickle. But last night it was about five throws. What went wrong last night? It should be about one or two.
Well, we were taking the Tim Flannery approach to the rundown. We felt if we could wear Margot down, because he's very, very fast, if we can keep him in that pickle long enough, he would get worn down and we'd be able to easily tag him out. And we did, thank goodness. Plus, we haven't had a rundown in months, so they wanted to get a little practice in of throwing the ball back and forth to each other. But the real story was, it can be hard with a fast runner like that. You know, the most important thing is you got to get Margot running 100%, and then you can't panic and throw the ball too quick. You have to go ahead and throw the ball when he gets a little bit of a head of steam going, and the receiving player has to make a move to the ball so he has some momentum. So we didn't execute it very well, but you know, when that runner is in the middle like that and he's not close to you, it can take a couple of throws with a real fast guy like that. And, you know, Marty, that's why we teach, you know, you don't want to teach guys to pump fake, but when you're a much slower fielder and you have a fast guy in a rundown like that, when you're running them back, sometimes you can pump fake like you're going to throw, say you're the second baseman, you're running, you can pump fake like you're going to throw to first, and he will stop because he wants to change direction, and then you go ahead and tag him out. So you can actually do that, too.
Well, good play. Well, again, an exciting moment for the fans to see it. And in your experience, were the best guys you ever saw going back and forth like that? Do you have anyone that comes to mind?
Yeah, nobody comes to mind. I mean, you always want to execute that rundown with one, you know, two throws max, especially when there's a batter runner involved. But when there's no batter runner involved, you know, you just want to get the guy out. You should still execute it the same way. But nobody comes to mind. It's the fast guys. You know where you see it. You see it a lot between third and home, because typically your catchers aren't real fast, and you get a fast guy hung up over there, and it could take a couple of throws to get it done.
Yeah, very. I think of Willie Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Willie Wilson, and of course the great Jackie Robinson and Carew and people like that. But yeah, I don't know if it's a lost art or whatever. Maybe the fielders are better, but you just don't see it that often. But you guys got it done last night. Very interesting. How about Maurice DeBone? What do you think of him and just the raw ability? And you got to see him at short last night as well. You saw him at second the night before.
Yeah. Well, I've heard a lot of good things about him. You know, I know his infield coach that he had over there in Milwaukee in the minor leagues have talked to him. And so before he came up, you know, I've saw the reports and heard the reports, and it was anxious to see the kid. And he has not disappointed in my mind. I mean, he's got a lot of talent. You know, there's a lot to work with there. You could see right away that he's got a good feel for the game and instincts out there. I love the way, you know, in our conversations about positioning and the plays, I love the look in his eye and how attentive he is. He gets it, and that's real good to see, because you see a lot of kids come up with ability. But, you know, you got to be able to apply that ability on the field. And I think this guy's got the IQ and the makeup to apply his skills. Now it's just a matter of making adjustments in this league and cleaning up his game to have him become a major league player.
Yeah, Mauricio Dubon. I got to get it straight. Dubon. Well, what I liked about him was going up the middle and then the transfer, the ball from the glove to the hand.
Yeah, well, you know, in some ways he reminds me, you know, of Crawford. He's a totally different, you know, body type, but his glove-to-hand transfer, he can do things. He can make the great play, and we just want him to make the routine play with no flash, and that'll all come with time. But you saw last night in the last two games, he made a very good play at shortstop. He made a diving play at second base. The skills are there. He gets a good jump on the ball. He's really trying to get a good jump on the ball. So there's a lot of good things. I mean, we haven't seen range from an infielder like him for quite a while. So as I said, there's a lot to work with there. I like the player, and you know, now it's a matter of becoming a major leaguer.
Yeah, I like the look in his eye. You know, he's got that look, and he's not afraid to swing the bat, and got a nice big hit. Of course, his first Giants, it was good, too. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I like what I see, and it's a good story. Do you get into that story at all with him coming from Honduras and coming to Sacramento? And what a dedicated kid.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah, we talked for a while, actually yesterday on the bench, about a lot of stuff. You know, we sat down for 15 minutes and we chatted to get to know each other a little bit. And, it is a great story. And what really stands out, you know, when you get players up from the minor leagues, you could see he's a confident kid. You know, he's lived a little bit. He's confident. And most of the good ones that come up here are, you know, you want to fit in. You know, you could be a little tentative. But no, he's confident. He knows what he can do. He believes he's a major leaguer, and that goes a long way to come up here and to compete and become the player that that we all think he can be.
Yeah, good, exciting. It's an exciting part of the season. I just want to touch on one other from last night, and that's Logan Webb. Well, this is a guy, you know, I say, look, he's got the arsenal.
Yeah.
You know, he can throw the 95 and drop 78 on you. It's a matter of maturity. It's only his third major league game. But from all the pitchers I've seen this year that have come up and down, this guy looks like he's got the best chance.
Well, you're right. I mean, in evaluating him and his stuff and what he did, I mean, you know, he did a heck of a job last night. I mean, you know, his first start, we saw him give up two runs right away and then settle in and really pitch well the rest of the way. And then last night, he worked himself, you know, in and out of trouble, but he was able to make pitches and get out of the jams. And usually that's a sign of a veteran pitcher that knows how to do that. This kid's got good stuff, and I think he can be a very good major league pitcher. There's no question about it. He's another one. He doesn't seem to be rattled by, you know, the situation or the league. He's out there doing his thing, and he's going to get better and better as well.
You know, he's got the look. He's got the jaw. You know what I mean? You know, remember boxers? You'd say, boy, that guy's got the jaw.
Yeah.
He looks like when he looks in at you, he's like, sure, come on, hit me. Try it.
Yeah, yeah. You know? He is. He's confident as well. He knows who he is and what he can do. And you need to be like that. You know, you need to be assertive and believe in yourself. And, he's not gonna buckle under the pressure.
No, I like it. All right. Woe is with us. Sacramento, they won, and they open up against the A's affiliate. We're going to cover that a little bit later on the show with Allie and Carmen and Melissa Lockhart about 11 o'clock. But they open up against the A's affiliate on Wednesday. And, well, going back in history of Giants AAA teams, there was one in Fresno that won, and then the one before that is you. And I saw the picture. You know?
Yeah.
You're looking a little bit younger these days. I will tell you that. But, hey, come on. Let's take us through a little bit of your championship and what it was like. And let me tell you something. Sacramento celebrated, and Steve Klein was right in the middle of it.
Oh, you know, you got that right. Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. We sent everybody, you know, contacted their staff down there, Steve Klein and Mr. Cabrera and Damon Miner and, of course, Brundy, the manager. They did a great job with all their players that they've had. They've had a lot of changes, and they were able to keep that thing together. So our hats are off to them. And, yeah, I think the last team to go to the playoffs for the Giants in the AAA was 1998, and it was the Fresno Club. And then before that, I was the manager in Phoenix before the Diamondbacks were in. I was there in 96 and 97, and we won the division in 96, and we won the Southern Division Championship and actually went to the championship game. And then in 97, we did the same thing. So we went to the finals 2 years in a row in Phoenix. The bad news is we lost both times in the championship. And you mentioned the team that beat us because it was the same team that were in the finals for two straight years. Gary Jones was their manager in AAA, as I was for Phoenix. And it was the Edmonton Trappers. And I don't know if anybody knows what team that might have been, but they're a local team right here in the Bay Area.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I know that. Of course, meaning the A's. We know
right. That.
God, my dear friend Mike Quadi.
Yes.
You know, did you ever manage against Mike? I don't know. Maybe Mike was, you were already in the big leagues, I think, when he had Sacramento.
Yeah, no, I never managed against him, but I'll never forget, you know, I was in rookie ball 1979, and I was in the Gulf Coast League, and I got promoted up to Salem, Virginia. And, you know, it was the last 2 weeks of the season. Our manager was Jim Mahoney. And I remember the batting cage in 1979 in Salem, Virginia. It was made of chicken wire. And there was holes all around it. And it looked like a ragtag group, like the old videos you see of people taking BP. And I saw two bald guys standing at the cage. And here I was, 20 years old. I hadn't seen many bald guys, you know, and my teammates. And one was Mike Quadi, and the other was Scott Kavinka, who was a high pick. But anyways, that's, you know, I played with Mike there for a little bit, and of course, our relationship grew from there.
Yeah, he's now a roving outfield instructor for the Minnesota Twins and raves about Jalen Davis. I know we'll see him at some point. And, you know, how about Minnesota? Well, I don't know if you follow this stuff at all, but they broke the all-time home run record. I don't know if you saw this yesterday. They hit six in the game yesterday and lost to Detroit. How about that?
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's the home run error. I mean, we thought it was about 10 years ago, right? With all the stuff that was going on, but certainly all the records are going to be broken this year. We see it here ourselves with balls flying out of this ballpark. So that's the error we're in. And there's going to be an awful lot of home runs when it's all said and done.
Boy, amazing. Touching on a couple of things that we like to cover here. Let's get away from the arcane stuff, sort of the rules of baseball, because I got stuff to talk about on the box. You know that.
Oh yeah.
I'm done with that. But what do you think of Players Weekend and those uniforms? What do you think of that one?
Well, you know, I think it was a great idea to have the Players Weekend and all that. You
Whoops,
know,
you there, Will?
Yep. Can you hear me? Hello.
Yeah, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay, I didn't hear you.
Okay.
Players Weekend, what did you think of that one?
Yeah, no, it was great to have a weekend for the players. I thought the whole idea of it was great. I thought the players had a lot of fun with it. But if there was one downside, I haven't spoken to anybody that really enjoyed the uniforms. You know, the white uniforms, it was hard to see the numbers, you know, so I looked down in the bullpen and tried to see what player was coming, or a double switch, a guy goes in the outfield. And, you know, you realize how important that scoreboard is when you can't see numbers and you can't see names on the back. So, you know, and the other side of it was the black uniforms. We were joking when Kurt Young went out to the mound for us, he looked like he had his dress slacks on, you know, like he was on the airplane traveling. He had a little sweatshirt on and those pants, they looked like dress slacks. I think a lot of us are going to use them to fly in the flight today because they looked really sharp.
I like it. Yeah, baseball tries to do it, but the way you couldn't see anything. I couldn't tell who was who.
Yeah, it was tough.
Well, this you and I have talked about this over the years, and that is September 1st is today, and rosters expand. This will be the last year of bringing everybody up. Next year it's 28, and you have to, you know, designate the ones that you're going to use in the game. And I thought about you in this one because, you know, you're the third base coach, and you got so many new outfield arms. How do you deal with, you know, the opponents and who they are, and where do you get your reports from?
Yeah, well, it's tougher, you know. You know, I just mentioned to our people yesterday, if we can get, you know, the potential call-up list ahead of time, especially for St. Louis, because we play today at 1 o'clock, then we jump on the plane, we get there at 1 o'clock tonight, and we have a 1 o'clock game tomorrow in St. Louis, so it doesn't give you a whole lot of time to try to run down on the September call-up. So it just takes more time. You know, thank goodness we have the analysts helping us, getting us the information. But, you know, as coaches, we still have to, you know, the hitting coaches have to watch the guy throw. You know, I have to watch the outfielders. I get video on their minor league video, if they have any, on their throwing ability. Otherwise, we're going off of our scouts' reports in the minor league. So, you know, sometimes you have to look several places to get the information on some of these minor league call-ups, because you just don't have the video like you do with the major leaguer, and you look at the stats. So it's a little more time consuming, and I think it's a good change for baseball, where next year you can only have three guys active, because when you have 8-9 new guys on the team, we've seen that, you know, work in our favor sometimes. It work against you in a matchup. You know, teams play a matchup, a different pitcher coming in and different players that you really don't know, and you hate to lose a pennant. You know, with all these call-ups, when somebody's really abusing the game with, you know, multiple moves like crazy, and you don't know these guys.
Yeah, you're going to see it here, I'll guarantee you, this month. There's still, you know, still a lot going on. A couple of players, and then we'll take a break. I know Carmen or Allie want to ask you some questions as well. But Cueto, 6 shutout innings last night for Sacramento, and I imagine he will be with you today, flying to, on the trip. And, you know, here he's back. It looks like he's back and ready to go.
It's great to have Johnny back around. You know, he was around this week, and it's just great to have him. He's going to give us a real shot in his arm. I mean, just the person, his personality, even if it is half a Johnny Cueto, because he lost so much weight, you can barely recognize the guy. He worked his tail off to get where he is. And it'll be great to have him on the plane. Of course, even better to have him on the mound, because this guy knows how to pitch. And when you add, you know, major league veterans that know what the heck they're doing, it makes everybody around them better. And we could use that right now.
Carmen, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, sure. You know, actually, I was thinking about this article that I saw in The Athletic, and it was talking about the bench that you guys have. You know, my example is when Nick Hundley was on the squad, I was like, this is the best backup catcher you could possibly ask for. And then Stephen Vogt enters the picture, and I'm like, wait. Hold the phone. He's pretty good as well. You just have so much depth now. What have you seen from the bench that you really like? Do you think this is one of the best you've seen?
Yeah, I think that our ability to match up now at this point in the season is by far way better than it was, you know, earlier in the year. You know, Farhan and his staff have done a nice job doing that, and that's part of the plan. You know, we need to score runs, and they've done a nice job, you know, so we can attack the righty or the lefty. Having some players you feel good about. You know, too often you have, you know, the same group going out there, and you have, you know, a tough lefty on the mound, and you got three or four left-handers starting, and over the course of the year, you know, that can be tough to put the runs on the board. Yeah, so we do have a good bench, and it's even going to get better now in September. I agree.
Yeah, who's the biggest surprise? Because there have been so many people that have come through. Anybody really, really surprise you this season so far?
Well, you know what? I've seen Stephen Vogt. You know, I've known what he can do. I saw the energy he brought to the A's and the person he was. You know, probably the biggest surprise, I think, is the obvious one. And we've had a lot of good players come up and contribute this season. But, yes, I mean, you know, his first opportunity was he have 18 home runs. I didn't anticipate seeing the pop in his bat that he has showed. And he's an outstanding outfielder. So, you know, it's great to see a guy get an opportunity, and it's not easy to do what he's done in his first opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Boy, the other one, whoa, and good question, Carmen, is Solano. Whoa, it's the bat for me, and I realize, you know, maybe a little, he's not Dubon in the field moving around. I understand that. But, well, I'll tell you something. This guy has got bat control of handling a pitch.
No question. And you know, I kind of take him for granted because I've seen him in the big leagues with Miami, and I liked him when he was down in Miami 4 or 5 years ago. That's what he was, a contact hitter, a guy that can hit and run. And he was solid in the field. You know, he doesn't have the great range or the great speed, but, boy, he's having his best year in the role that we're asking him to do. And, you know, it's been a while since we've had a utility guy, one guy that you feel could play all over the infield and contribute offensively as well. I mean, this guy's not only contributing, he's one of our better hitters, hitting over 300. So, I knew he was a good player. So I think that's a good point. You could say a little bit of a surprise because you don't expect the utility guy to hit 330 and do what he's been doing.
No, not at all. And Carmen brought up the bench. And I'll tell you, Rickard is growing on me a little bit. I know he had a slide into second. And look, anytime you slide into second today, everything gets looked at, which is absolutely insane to me. But against left-handed pitching, it looks like he has a clue.
Yeah, well, exactly right. And to Carmen's point about the bench and the matchups that we have now, you know, we can make a move. And this guy puts up great at-bats against left-handers. He did it last night, had a nice ball game. So, you know, you're not losing anything. You know, when they make a move in the bullpen, you feel like you can counter that. And when you're in a close game, that's extremely, extremely important.
Anybody tougher than Pilar taking one off the chin?
Well, I haven't seen it. I mean, you know, he got smoked pretty good and didn't flinch. The trainers were talking to him for about 4 innings, and there's no way you were going to get him out of there. He felt he was fine. Of course, he played yesterday as well. So, tough kid. You know, Superman was very tough, by the way, right?
Boy, very good. Hey, before we leave the topic, and Carmen brought it up as well, and Carmen, I know, has been a big fan of Maranta and Kerry Crowley as well. Maranta, boy, that was something to see him go down last night.
Yeah, that was terrible to see. You never want to see that. The way he went down holding his arm, you know, it reminded me a little bit of Dave Dravecki.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of Giant fans that saw that with Dave, and it's just an awful feeling. When you see that happen, you know, your stomach, you just get sick right on the spot. And he's doing okay. He's doing okay. He's got a pretty good strain, and we'll see how he comes out of it.
Yeah, MRI today. Hey, Will and I, of course, enjoy talking about River Islands. And, well, I don't know if you know it, but they had a grand opening out there last week, and it's going on for a few weeks, of its 4 all-new model homes. And they're called Newport. How about that for a name? I like that, Newport.
Yeah, Newport, like down south. That's a beautiful place.
Yes, exactly.
I think Newport and Bridgeport, right, are the new ones that are opening up in August and September here. Well, August is through, and now in September. And the neat thing about it is, I mean, of course, everything's got good views, but they have the views, and they have lakes and docks. And, you know, I never realized that you can actually boat from River Islands down to the Bay Area if you want to. If you have a boat, you can take that trip.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the smallest house in the neighborhood is a single-story plant, 2,200 square feet, which is terrific. 3 or 4 bedrooms, California room. Remember the Florida rooms? Well, did you ever remember that in Florida?
Wait, was that, were you talking, does it have some sort of, I'm thinking ceiling
like
fans. I'm not sure. What is that room?
Well, on the homes in Florida, they would have, they call it a Florida room, and you'd have built onto the sort of the rear of the house a room that was screened in.
Yeah.
So you didn't have the mosquitoes, you know, and the other things flying at you.
Yeah.
So they have the California room here, which is essentially an extension of the indoor area into the outdoor space. So I always like that. I always like sitting out there at night.
No question. You know, the place, the South, has that a lot. I know in Louisiana and South Carolina, you get the screened-in porches. Georgia, you see a lot of that. Yeah, that's a nice thing to have, a little reading room. You can kick back and watch nature, and you don't have to worry about the mosquitoes.
Well, I love it. I love that part of River Islands. But as you say, everything is built on the shores of the 17-acre lake, and as Woe says, you could get to the Bay Area. 11 neighborhoods, 35 model homes now, and a terrific lifestyle. They've come a long way, and they had a very good summer.
Yeah, no question. I hear everything's going great, and the baseball field has been a great venue for them. I think it's filled every weekend. They've got all kinds of stuff going on. You know, that's even going to get bigger and better as time goes on as well. But it's been utilized quite a bit, so that's great to see that it's all working out.
Yeah, beautiful. RiverIslands.com. And, of course, John Doyle, well, we had him on with the soccer fields.
Yeah, yeah. John's a great man. I mean, if you get a chance to be around John Doyle, do it if you're a soccer enthusiast, because it's well worth the time. I mean, who better? You got the guy right here in the Bay Area.
Wow.
And just a great person and a great soccer coach, no doubt about it.
All right, cool. All right, great to talk with Woe and Carmen and Allie. And get ready for baseball today. It's Jeff Samardzija. On the hill, Eric Lauer, a lefty for San Diego. As the Giants wrap this one up, and then on the plane to St. Louis and L.A. before coming home a week from Monday. We're getting down to the last couple of homestands here of 2019. Woe and I will be back. We'll talk a little Samardzija when we come back, and the amazing season he's had, and a little of Mike Yastrzemski, Woe. And I know you're that New England guy, and every time you say his name, you think of his grandfather. But I want to talk a little Yaz with you, and I know Allie's got some things to ask you as well. So we'll do that with Ron Wotus right after this. Well, a couple of things before Allie jumps in here. Yastrzemski. And I look at good stories of baseball, and, you know, we look at the kid in Houston, Jordan Alvarez, who looks like the best left-handed hitter in the history of the American League right now with Houston. But this kid, Yastrzemski, well, every day he does something, and he hits the ball the other way, hits it hard, and what do you see?
Yeah, well, yeah, I see a guy that's played, lived a little bit, as we like to say. He's, you know, played in the minor leagues a long time. He knows who he is. He knows what type of player he is. He's a good outfielder. And, you know, he continues to work hard at his hitting. He puts the ball in play. So, you know, I see like a career minor leaguer that, you know, he's not a young kid anymore. But he knows who he is. And when he got to the big leagues, he's taken advantage of his opportunity, because probably he has a talent. Well, I know he has a talent to do it, but he wasn't going to fail. It was his chance, and he took the bull by the horns, and he's done the job, and he's continued to approach the game like that. You know, for me, he's no nonsense. You know, you see him prepare the same way. Whenever there's optional hitting, he's out there. He's always out there shagging fly balls. So he doesn't put the cart before the horse. He takes care of business, and it shows up in his game, and that's the person he is. That's what I see.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Ken Mock always said it to me that when you get to the big leagues, it's like driving on the freeway. You know, you may be going 40 miles an hour in AAA. You get to the big leagues, it's 85 miles an hour, so to speak.
Yeah.
So for him, he's made that adjustment because he's never been in the big leagues before. But in the modern game of today, with pitching the way it is, he gets his pitch and he doesn't miss it very often.
Yeah, and that's a great analogy, how things speed up. And I've always believed, even myself, looking back to my career when I was, you know, 21 and in the big leagues and you're coming up, I always felt if you didn't fail a little bit in the minor leagues and you just come up every, you know, you have 3 or 4 years, everything's good and you never failed, you really don't know how to deal with it. You know, you haven't experienced that failure. And when you come up to the big leagues and you haven't experienced that failure or disappointment, and now you fail at this level, that 80-mile-an-hour freeway could get scary real fast. You don't know how to get out of it. You don't know what to do. And I'm sure Yaz has had his, you know, down years and his struggles and really learned himself and has lived, as I said, through these experiences that he's able to handle the bright lights in the 80-mile-an-hour freeway up here at the major leagues.
Yeah, he's been great. I think he's the story, the offensive story of the year for me. What he's accomplished in hitting it out. You know, there are going to be 242 players right now who hit 10 or more home runs, and they are going to break the record for that. And they're also going to break the record for players hitting 20 or more home runs. And you've got 4 or 5 guys who are going to hit 20,
yeah,
over this next month. It's going to be pretty interesting. He's going to be one of them. Allie, jump in here and see what's up with you.
Well, just going off of, like, you've got to know Yaz a little bit more, and there are so many call-ups throughout this season, and I started thinking after you're talking about being able to talk to Dubon for a little bit and get to know him, how often are you able to sit down with these players coming up and just get a feel for where they're at?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Allie, and I think, you know, the number one thing is you want to do that because you want to know the guy you're trying to help first and foremost. And, you know, I'll be honest, with so much movement that you have, I don't always get to know the pitchers as well or as quickly as I do the infielders, you know, the guys that and the position players that I have to coach, you know, whether it's giving them signs at third base. But I would say I make a huge effort when it's an infielder to get to know him more because I'm coaching him more, not just on the bases, but defensively. Then it would be outfielders and then the pitchers. But, you know, you try to make an effort to do that and establish that trust and relationship. So, you know, the player knows you. He knows where you're coming from, opposed to just telling them what to do all the time. Yeah, it's very important.
Well, and I know you only have so much time to talk to each player, so what kind of things do you talk to him to get to know him as quickly as you
yeah.
can?
Well, I think, you know, first off, you want to know about their family and brothers and their own situation, girlfriends, wives, you know, what their situation is, where they're from, things of that nature. You know, you always seem to find connections, you know, with somebody when you find out where they're from or what their situation is, and that's always helpful. So, you know, it depends how much time, how long the guy's here. You know, you get to know them more the longer they're here, but if they're here for a brief time, you know, those are the main things, and then you got to jump in and you got to start, you know, working on the things and giving him the things he needs to know to play the game that night.
Yeah. Okay. Boy, interesting. No, it's great stuff. You know, it's amazing, Will, isn't it? All the stuff that happens off the field. And the game takes now 3 hours and 5 minutes, but it's 17 hours of preparation for those 3 hours and 5 minutes. Isn't that amazing?
So is that time, I'm curious, Marty, or Allie or Carmen, if you know, is that time up? Is this the longest the games have been on average in a long time, you know, because we've made a tremendous effort, right, to shorten the games. But with all the home runs, I'm wondering if the games are longer today.
Yeah, Carmen and Allie can look it up, and I just sort of threw that out there. But knowing I do the post-game shows, and, well, I will tell you this, I know it's going to be 3 hours, 5 minutes, 3 hours, 10 minutes, and that's just the way it goes. More balls are being fouled off.
Right.
They don't put the hitter away. You're getting more strikeouts, deeper into counts.
Right.
And I think that's part of it.
Right. Pitching changes, right? I mean, not a lot of teams are letting their starters go more than 5 or 6 innings, and you're making a pitching change there. I think we played a lightning-quick game the other night with Paddock on the mound, who had great stuff. I think it was under 2.5 hours, around 2.5 hours. That's a rarity today, no question.
So, have you ever seen Paddock when he comes to the ballpark?
No, I have not.
He looks like Wyatt Earp.
Go ahead,
Carmen.
I was just going to answer the question.
Please.
It's 3:09 is the average time, and last year was 3:04, year before 3:08. So, yeah, it does look like it's a little bit longer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could feel it. Well, another part of the story today, and I know Carmen and Allie jumped, I want you guys to jump in on this as well. What could happen with Sandoval today, Woe? And this is, of course, the end of the homestand. He's having the operation on Wednesday. He'll be done for the season, but this could be the end of the circle for him. Who knows? But get your thoughts about that possibility today, and Carmen and Allie, absolutely, you too.
Yeah, well, I saw him hitting in the cage yesterday, and I haven't talked to, you know, Shuey or Zoe, but I know he was in there swinging, looked fine swinging, but I don't know for sure. I would anticipate, you know, if there's a roster spot available, I think that he will get that opportunity to pinch it. We'll have to wait and see. I don't know what you guys think.
I don't know. The last quote I saw was that he was in a lot, you know, in pain, and, you know, that's one of the things I think I question if that's a good idea or not, but if he's been cleared to do it, then of course give him the opportunity if there's the roster spot and he really wants to do it.
Yeah, I'd give him the chance, but just be real careful.
So, are you who's saying it's going to happen?
Me.
Okay. Marty wins.
Marty. I would say maybe not, but I don't know. Who knows?
Okay,
I'm
going to say it is. I'm going to go with Marty and say.
I feel
it
like you might know better than me. So.
No, I just said I didn't talk to the trainers or him or the hitting coaches. I just saw him in there whacking. So.
Come on, it's got to have, even if they walk him. So I said this last night to Dave Fleming, and I thought Dave had a great comment. I said, you know, the old story of Mickey Mantle, his last at bat, Denny McClain grooved one and he hit a home run. And I said, well, they'll tell Sandoval, hey, a fastball's coming right down the middle. He may not want that. He may want one that he can bounce and hit.
Yeah, I hope he drops down a bunt in the shift and gets sets the record that way. That'd be fair. I mean, he stole the base, right? He pitched. He set a record earlier. So I think that would be big news. But that would be second to a three-run homer.
Boy, you saw him when he was a kid, he first came up, and now you see him today. Just a final thought on him.
Yeah, you know, great career. A San Francisco Giant that will always be loved here in the Bay Area. This is where he made his mark, you know, came back and did it again for us. A free swinger, right? A free swinger, bad ball hitter in this day and age of plate discipline and all those things. You have a guy like him that drove in runs and got the job done by wheeling that bat. And you look at him at third base. I remember when he was a kid, he still approaches the game the same way. He loves to play, very energetic. He's probably louder now that he's not playing every day than he is when he is playing every day, because he's working part of the time. And great career, good guy. We were lucky to see Pablo Sandoval for all these years.
Yeah, very well put. And it's funny as you said that, we'll wrap it up with this. From that era, and let's say 2008 right up to today, there are a lot of people who played for the Giants that tug at your heartstrings, and he's one of them.
Yeah, yeah. No question. He's right there, up there with all of them. And the Lincecums, obviously, when you have success like we did and you win, you never forget those guys. Hopefully we'll see him at some reunions down the road. And this won't be the last that we see of all the great players, and I know it won't be, that came through here through San Francisco.
Beautiful. Hey, well, have a great game
all
today,
right,
and a good road trip, and look forward to catching up with you. I appreciate it.
All right, Marty. Good being with you.
All right, that is our third base coach, Ron Wotus, of the San Francisco Giants.